All right, everybody, welcome in to Triple Play Sports. At the sports pub, we go over the week in sports and all that was. And tonight we're going to do that again with Phil Tucker, myself, Kenny Mann, Elijah Jacobs on the way. He's running a little behind tonight, but he'll be here. And we'll start it off with Adam. The leadoff double starts the show. Let's do it.
All right. Well, so, we texted during the game about how entertaining a game it was. Well, you know, a lot of people felt that way, because that Elite Eight game between Iowa and LSU, the most watched women's basketball game ever, and its 12.3 million viewers, was better than most non-NFL sporting events over the past year and a half. The game had more viewers than the clinching game of the World Series last season and all but one of the NBA Finals games last year.
That's amazing. Impressive. That's very impressive. And we did text during it, and I watched it. You watched it. I could probably count on one hand the amount of times I sat and watched women's college basketball. But that was one of them. It was exciting. It was, we'll get into the players themselves, but the atmosphere, the overall just, the feel of what you felt like you were watching something very, very important and very, big in the sports world.
Yes.
I've never felt that way before watching a women's college basketball game.
Yeah, I mean, it was, to me, what was crazy about that game is that crowd, you could just tell they were in it.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, I think the only thing I was kind of disappointed is that Angel Reese fouled out.
She did.
Because, I mean, that was that matchup with her and Caitlin Clark.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, I was impressed with Angel Reese. I mean, she was all over the court. She was playing defense.
Yes. It was an amazing event to watch. I don't know if it says more about our thirst for something different and as sports fans, or does it say more about, you mentioned the NBA. I've never remembered the NBA being this low, not only in excitement level in the nation and also ratings. We've made mention of it, and it was funny. I heard Charles Barkley mention this too, about how the NBA has just become a three-point shooting contest, and that when he watched this women's the women's Elite Eight, he said, that's the excitement that the NBA used to have, and it's lost that. And so I don't know what this says more about these women or about what we've done to the NBA.
To me, I think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Because you have a couple of players in college, women's college basketball right now, that are just head and shoulders above what we're used to seeing.
Yeah.
I mean, even you think back to kind of some of the early big names, the Rebecca Lobos and those kind of players that, even if you weren't a fan, you probably heard their names if you paid any attention to college sports.
Absolutely.
But these ones right now, Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, some of these, they're playing at such a high level.
Yeah.
And to me, watching that game from Monday night, you saw basketball being played at such a pure level.
Yeah.
Yes, there was a lot of three-point shooting. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, that shot of Caitlin Clark's, her three-point shot is just smooth.
Steph Curry-like.
Almost better, I think, at times.
Yeah.
Just because, she'll kind of step to the side and, if someone's in her face. But there was also so much defense being played. I mean, the way some of them were playing, I wouldn't want to be in the middle of that.
Yeah.
I mean, they were playing nice, tough defense. And so, I mean, it was a very entertaining game, which I can't say I've seen an NBA game in a long time that I thought was that entertaining.
Yeah, and I was so impressed with, I've heard everything I've heard about Caitlin, and I've watched a few of her highlights, but I hadn't sat and watched her on the court. And what got me more than anything was, she can shoot the ball. My goodness. She's fearless. She fires the ball 40 feet away. And the level of, I don't know what the word would be. Confidence, I guess, is the easy way to say it. almost a cockiness that I'm going to shoot from everywhere. I dare you to stop me. That's the kind of thing that you used to see with the Larry Bird and a, and you still you see it with Steph Curry, like you said. And she does those things, and, yeah. and she does it in you know in the moment. That I think was the thing that impressed me the most. That game was tied at the half. She turned that third quarter into a show.
Yeah. Well, and to me, one thing I noticed, like the first half of the game, you know, she had made some bad passes.
Yeah.
But the second half, she came out and she was feeding that ball into spots where it's like, how do you make that pass?
Yeah.
But she was making them. So it's not just her three-point shooting. It's also, you know, the fact that if she's got a teammate going down towards the rim.
Oh, she was great.
She can just make that pass in
there. Firing it in there, yeah. I mean, I thought it lived up to everything. I almost feel a little disappointed that, and again, I don't know enough about women's college basketball. A little disappointed that that wasn't the final, you know, because the level.
The rematch level and all that, yeah.
Now, I know that there can be now, the way this sets up, you know, Caitlin obviously goes on and is going to play, I think, UConn first, is it?
Yep.
Okay. And, I mean, look, good luck there. I mean, UConn women with Gina Auriemma, that's a task. Waiting more than likely after that is South Carolina, who appears, from what everyone who knows about women's college basketball, to be almost an unbeatable team right now. But wouldn't it be something to see Caitlin Clark in her final game playing against South Carolina for everything? I'll tell you yes. what, that will probably break more records if that's the way it goes.
Yeah. So, I mean, if this game that was an Elite Eight game drew over 12 million, that could easily draw 14 million or more.
Yeah. Now, I was thinking about this. I don't know if I wrote something about this, and I'll ask you. So her, Caitlin Clark, and Angel Reese.
Yeah.
They're going to go to the WNBA.
Yep.
They've made that clear. Do you think it can be this good there? Not for them. It's going to be great for them.
Yeah.
For the fans.
When it comes to the playoff times, I think it could. The hard thing is regular season.
Yeah.
I mean, every sport besides football, college football, NFL, you have so many games in the regular season that it's hard to keep that excitement
sure.
and that energy for every single game of the regular season. But I'll tell you what, if these two are facing each other in the playoffs,
I think that would be very exciting.
I think that's going to be a big draw, especially if they were to happen to be drafted by teams where they're in the different conferences,
right.
so they could face each other
in the finals or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I almost feel a little disappointed that this is probably the highest level of excitement we will see. Not that the WNBA can't be successful. I'll say this. If these two going to the WNBA doesn't catapult it to a different level, then I don't think anyone ever will. I think it will always then remain at that level of kind of, I feel it's like at that MLS and that, you know, kind of thing where it's got its crowd, it's got its folks that'll go and they're diehard, but it's not going to rise above that. Here's their chance to rise above that with these two. But there is just something, maybe it's something about the college atmospheres and the one and done part of the tournaments.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to recreate this in any way in the WNBA. So we'll see. The thing I will be more interested to see with both of these girls moving on will be how they play there, because they are going to go against professionals, women that have played for, you know, 5, 7, 10 years. I'm curious to see how that goes. Like, what were the numbers look like there as opposed to college?
Because anytime you're talking about going from college to the pro, you're talking about a huge, you know, huge jump. And to me, the number of women that make it to the WNBA, you know, I mean, they're the best of the best in women's basketball, you know. So it's going to be very interesting, I think, over the next couple seasons to see how they develop.
Yeah.
And what impact they have on the league in general.
Absolutely. And I am just looking forward now. You know, this got my attention. I'm going to watch, you know, the next two. I want to see where this leads. It's been a lot of fun. I want to see Caitlin Clark play more.
Yeah.
She was phenomenal. It was a lot of fun to watch. It really was. I did feel a little like Steph Curry-like, where I said, I have not seen this before. Not yes. this. And she, you know, again, like I said, she's ruthless. She's not going to back down. I found her and her team so impressive in the way they, this is what we're going to do. And if you stop us, you know, great. If you can't, we're just going to keep doing it all night. And they were unbelievable. I give LSU credit. They had the game tied. Like I said, I feel like the third quarter, boy, it was an explosion. Yeah. And LSU just couldn't keep up with that. And that's the difference.
Yeah.
But
I mean, the fourth quarter was a lot tighter than what the score looked like because, you know, the third quarter was so much in Iowa's favor.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, because Iowa started out from the gate in control of the game. LSU came back and tied it. And there were a couple times in the fourth quarter where it looked like, LSU may be able to come back in this game. But, you know, they were able to close it out. And
one other note, what a pleasure to watch, and we see this a lot in the men's college game, not as much as I'd like to see it, but I see it all the time now. The ball movement, the passing, the designed plays that the women are running, the positioning on the court, alternatives to each play, watching them run through, okay, this isn't there, I'm going here. Such a pleasure to watch basketball the way it was designed to be played. And then you go turn on, like I mentioned, an NBA game and you go, what is this anymore? What is it? And this is a shame because this is what it used to look like.
Yeah. I mean, I can remember in the days of, you know, the Bad Boy Pistons and the rise of Michael Jordan, you know, I mean, they would get in there and mix it up.
Oh,
they would, you know, and the women's game, they're not afraid to do it.
No.
They're not afraid to get in and get dirty like that, like they did in the NBA, you know, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So much more entertaining.
And the roles were so much more defined back then in the NBA. You had the big man. You know, you had the power forward. You had your two guards, one the quarterback running the team.
Yeah.
I vow anybody, go watch an NBA game, and I'll almost ask you at the end of a quarter, who plays what position? It's almost hard to understand.
Yeah.
There's no center, basically. So that's gone. There's no big man. So you're going, well, this guy put up eight shots. Is that the shooting guard? No, that's the power forward. You're going, why is he shooting from three all night? There's almost a positionless game now that the NBA has created. It's just five guys firing away.
Yeah, and it's
hurting the league.
Yeah.
Really, really hurting the league, and it's showing in the ratings. So.
Yeah. I mean, one of the men's games I will say I did get to watch quite a bit of, and it was, to me, very entertaining, was the North Carolina State game. And what's his name? DJ Burns.
Yes.
Big man.
Yeah, again, they have centers
in college. Entertaining.
He is. He's smiling. He's laughing.
You could tell he was having so much fun in that game.
Yeah.
And that was so fun to see.
It was.
He's got such a, just his body movement, his face, he has such a big personality without even hearing him talk.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was fun to watch. That was another good one.
And we've mentioned it, the men's college game just as well as the women's. It's watching the ball movement, watching the players, you know, go play defense, trap, half court press, full court press. Yeah, you know, watching the strategies. And I just don't understand how the NBA watches this and says, maybe we're just doing something wrong here. We've got to go back to the way we played basketball, where it mattered how to play positions, where a defensive guy was heralded. You know, Michael Jordan won Defensive Player of the Year a bunch of times. A lot of people don't even know that. The guy was, not only was he scoring 40 points a game, he was back on defense in your face, running guys down on the court. I mean, that's what, but they all did it.
Yeah. To me, the NBA, until someone comes up with a defense that shuts down
The three.
Yeah. I think that they won't change because there's no incentive for them to change.
Does a Zach Edey make it and succeed in a centerless NBA now, it seems. But he's 7'4".
He is such a...
I mean, he's wilt size.
Aberration when it comes to his size and stature
down
there.
Did you see him cut down the net? He didn't use the ladder. He stood on the court and he cut the net. I've never seen anything like it. He's so big.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
But then I
wonder...
But
the way the style of play, I don't know how well it's going to translate.
I know. And that's a shame. Because you think about it and you say, gosh, what a weapon to have to throw it into this guy down low in the paint. How do you stop it? Someone has to get in there and try and stop this guy. But when the other team is running down the court in transition every possession and firing threes, Edie's not going to be able to run back and forth and get in position on the three-point line. And that's where these guys just can't do it.
Yeah.
And I wish it was different. It used to be the old NBA. You know, say you had an Edie or say you had a Bill Cartwright and who played both for the Knicks and the Bulls, you know, and a Laimbeer. They would jog down together to the other end of the court.
Yeah.
They would line each other's bodies up and start bouncing off each other in the paint. And then that possession would end and they would jog together to the other side. And they just, there's nothing like that anymore. Everybody stays away from each other and they all fire away and that's it. But yeah, this was wonderful to watch. It really was. I loved watching it. Can't wait to see where it goes.
Yep. We'll know on Friday.
Yeah.
And then I believe Sunday is the women's championship game.
Yeah.
Monday is the men's final. So the Rangers goalie, Jonathan Quick, also, of course, longtime Kings goalie, now stands alone as the winningest U.S.-born goalie in the NHL.
Okay.
He collected win number 392 in the Rangers' win over the Coyotes on Saturday, passing Ryan Miller.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think. Yeah, I mean, do I consider either of those goalies great? I consider them really good goalies. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if that says something about the American goalie, but hey, good for him. I mean, look, that's great.
I mean, that's a lot of wins you know, when you think of how few U.S.-born goalies there, you know, I can't think of that many off the top of my head.
I'm surprised Billy Smith isn't up there. Now, I'm trying to remember. Now, maybe for all I know, Billy Smith may have been Canadian. I'd have to check, but the Islanders, Billy Smith, had to rack up, God, a couple of hundred wins with the Islanders during the cup runs. But he also shared time with Chico Resch, so maybe some of that is a little off. But Quick's been around, and you know, he's been around a long time. So, you know,
one Stanley Cup or two the Kings.
That's right. So, yeah, credit where credit's due. That's good. Good for him.
Getting back to kind of wrapping up the NCAA tournaments. So the Final Four is set for both the men's and the women's tournaments. In the men's side, we'll see North Carolina State and Purdue, and Alabama will face UConn. On the women's side, NC State and South Carolina, and UConn and Iowa. I wonder how many times you've had two schools have two of the four Final Four teams. That's impressive.
It is impressive. You know what's really not impressive? My Final Four bracket, Phil. So I have no one left. You know, my Final Four to go back was Iowa State, Arizona, Kentucky. God, I'm stupid. And Tennessee. Now, Tennessee came the closest for me.
Yeah.
And I really thought they had a great shot there, but they couldn't stop Edie. You know, who did you have Final Four?
I had UConn, Alabama... Or not Alabama, sorry. UConn, Baylor, Houston, and Tennessee. Okay. And I've got one team left.
That's right. You got UConn.
But I didn't have them as a champion, so.
Okay.
The most I can have is one more correct answer.
Yeah. I thought the games this week, obviously starting with Tennessee, you know, they were there. They were right there. They had a chance to knock Purdue off. I felt like every time they got close, they tied it. They got right there. But they just couldn't hit the next shot. They couldn't hit the breakthrough, we're taking the lead shot. They just couldn't do it. Zach Edey was invincible. He was absolutely invincible. Purdue did what they should do, which is get the ball to Edey down low. he just couldn't be stopped. And if you did stop him, he was getting fouled. Obviously, it was hard to not foul him. It's a tough task to beat a team with a guy that good. I think he put up 41 and change, and he made more than 75% of his free throws. So even hacking him wasn't the answer.
Yeah, it was not a good idea. Yeah.
Tennessee hung, but at the end, Purdue was just too tough. You know, I almost feel like with them, they're running on a revenge tour from last year, losing to the 16 seed. Which, looking at them now, you go, how is that possible? But they did, and that maybe puts them on a collision course with UConn eventually. I don't want to downplay UConn playing. I don't want to downplay Alabama, but I don't think they're in the same stratosphere as UConn.
Yeah.
Give Alabama credit, though. I mean, Alabama.
They've made a run that would...
Alabama!
I would have bet money on them being out by the second round. I mean, that's... I was surprised. Of course, it would help them is the fact that St. Mary's lost to Grand Canyon.
That's right.
I couldn't see Grand Canyon beating Alabama after that.
But. No, but I mean, give them credit. I don't know how long it's been for them in a Final Four for basketball. Maybe we're starting to see a change over at Alabama, right?
We'll see.
I mean, maybe basketball becomes their thing now that Saban's not around, and they take a back seat, the football team. But UConn, I mentioned it. You know, they're just amazing. NC State. So here's your Cinderella. Here's your darling. What are they, 11?
11 seed, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I really didn't think they'd beat Duke. I just did not. I thought Filipkowski there was going to go off on them. He did not.
The kid you mentioned. Quite a bit of foul trouble,
he did.
Too. Yeah.
That kid you mentioned.
I think it's DJ Burns.
DJ Burns. Boy, is this going to be fun. He's going to. Are they going to match him up with Zach Edey?
Well, what's been funny is all the talk after that game about he should try out for the NFL.
Yeah, I know.
And the fact that I saw someone say that they've heard from a few people that there's actually some interest.
Yeah,
there you go.
He's
NFL
very
teams.
Athletic. You know, that's the thing. It's going to be very interesting. Now, the only hope I think that NC State has here is they've got to hit threes and a lot of them. And they've had to, this comes down to how do you stop Zach Edey?
That's going to be a tough challenge, I think, even for DJ Burns. I mean, because, he plays with a lot of energy.
But the concern would be if I'm the coach, and I hate to tell you, I don't know the coach of North Carolina State. But if I am the coach, I'd love to say, go get him. Let's go get him. I would worry about foul trouble. And I don't want him with three fouls in the first half. So I don't believe they'll do that. I think they're going to have some other folks on Zach Edey early to see if they can. If you double him, he kicks it out to the 3-point line, and he does that very well. Now, I guess you can go about it that way and say, look, if we double Edey and he kicks it out and they hit those, well, that's life. Yeah. But let's let them beat us on the perimeter and not let Edey beat us in the paint. You could do that, or you can just have someone singled up on him, different guys, and hope that you have enough of these guys because they're going to get fouls.
Yeah.
So I don't know which is the best way to go about this. He's 7'4". I don't know which is the best way to handle it.
Yeah, it's going to be a challenge for sure. So it's funny. So you're talking about how busted your bracket is. So, of course, we have a little family pool. Mm-hmm. It's both my brother-in-law's, my son, myself, and my mother-in-law, who's a big Michigan fan.
Right.
It's funny, depending on how the four games fall,
right,
all but one of us could still win the bracket.
Well, that's interesting.
So it's like if UConn wins,
right,
this game, but loses, I win it all.
Okay.
If UConn loses, my mother-in-law wins it.
Well, there you go.
Someone's if Purdue winning. Wins it, my son wins it also.
Well, there you go. All right. The Triple Play Sports Pub continues its incredible action this evening, and it welcomes in one of its three hosts, Elijah Jacobs, who was running a little behind, but we're happy to have you back here, Elijah. Welcome back to Triple Play Sports, Elijah.
Hello.
Okay.
Well, at least it wasn't a hello.
That's true. He's trying to deepen his voice. Phil Tucker, Elijah Jacobs, Kenny Mann, that's Triple Play. Thanks for joining us here. And so we were mentioning, Elijah, the NCAA Elite Eight, which turned into the now Final Four. Where are you on the brackets, Elijah?
You know, I've only got one team left, and it's UConn. Everyone else is
out. Do you have them winning it all? Or?
No, I had Houston winning it all. I went from having 13 teams to having none.
Wow.
It was crazy. I think the thing that just shocked me is looking at the NCAA tournament, I didn't realize how dominant Zach Edey was until all of a sudden you just see him out there and you go, he's a physical presence Shaq-esque. I mean, it's like he's just so big because he's not just tall. This is a big physical player.
7'4" is not normal.
It's not normal. But he's not just like, you know, like a Kristaps Porzingis 7'4".
Oh, no, he's thick.
Yeah, and he's muscular. I mean, the iconic play of that wasn't even the shots he was making. To me, it was his block at the end where he just jumped up there and went whack.
Tennessee didn't have an answer. We mentioned this. They just could not come up with a scheme to stop him, slow him, whatever you want to call it. Going forward, now that you're here, Elijah, NC State, an 11 seed, they have to figure out a way.
And they have their own physical dominant presence for a different reason. That guy's just...
He's fun, too.
He's fun to watch because he doesn't look like he should move like he does.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah. He's built like a tank, but moves like
a jaguar, right? He's really fun to watch. Mm-hmm. It's going to be very interesting to see if they can come up with something. I will say this. In a tournament like this where you don't normally play these teams, and that's the fun of the tournament, you don't normally play these teams... Sometimes you do have an advantage, as an NC State does now. They've been able to watch Zach Edey in the tournament now for three games, and watched what other teams have tried to do. And hopefully, they can get a little schooled by that and go, okay, this didn't work, this did work, and try to see if they have the players capable of doing those things. It's not going to be easy, but I think your only hope really with Edey is that you get him in foul trouble. I don't know how you do that, but I think that's your only hope.
Here's the other thing with him. He can shoot, which is the other aspect of this that's scary, because normally that was the key to stop Shaquille O'Neal, was just foul him and make him shoot.
Well, I'm not saying him foul. I'm saying him in foul trouble, meaning you've got to find a way to, when he's in
draw
the paint.
Draw fouls from him, and that's not... He doesn't seem like someone who does a lot. Yeah.
If he's standing in the paint, go at him. Hope for the foul. If he's near you, drive towards him. Hope for the foul. You know, maybe you get two or three fouls on him, and they sit him down for a little while. I think he missed 32 seconds of that game. 32 seconds.
You know, and it's funny you say that, because when Tennessee was driving into the paint, you even saw him back away. Like,
because
okay,
he knows I don't want to get in foul trouble. He's too valuable.
Yeah, if I can't get a clean block, I'm just going to let this guy score.
Which is smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so, you know, we'll see where it all leads.
So a couple quick college basketball headlines that affect local schools. So the UT Lady Vols have fired head coach Kelly Harper after 5 seasons and a 108-52 record. Harper had won more than 20 games in 4 of the 5 seasons, but the Lady Vols have yet to get past a Sweet 16 since 2016. Mm. I mean, a 675 record's not bad. What you expect.
Hard to replace a legend. We say that all the time. You don't want to turn a job down, but you probably don't want to be the person after the person.
Yeah,
no. You know, and that's
she's
where
the
she
second
lands.
Head coach they've had.
Yeah.
Since Summit retired.
Yeah, well, the first was so quick.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know, and this is the problem the Pats are going to have, the Patriots rather.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, I was just
you know the Belichick thing is going to linger, you know, and might linger beyond Gerard Mayo for the next guy, and then it takes a while for people to forget.
And on another note, we'll see how Alabama responds,
right,
too.
Saban, same type of thing.
I mean, now, granted, they got one of the best coaches on the market. But.
Yeah. But the thing with Alabama is you have the ghost of Saban, but you also have the ghost of Bear Bryant.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The Patriots, all you have is Belichick.
Yeah.
The Lady Vols, all you have is Pat Summitt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she was so much of what that program was for such a long time that it's going to, that ghost is going to linger for a long time there. And they could see, they could have two or three more coaches, I think, before it.
Yeah.
Now, unless you get, unless you start having success, you know, then that helps, you know.
Yeah, I feel bad
helps
for
drive that away. But
the guy or girl that replaces Gino Auriemma at UConn for the women.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy's got, what does he have, 11 titles? I mean, it's, or 11 Final Fours and it's 7 titles? It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, those memories.
He might have an 8th before it's all
said. Those memories linger for a long time with the fans. So when you're a new coach or the second coach and they're going, well, why aren't you doing what Gino did? Or why aren't you doing what.
But it makes it even harder there because for UConn. Yeah, their men's basketball has had some success over the last, what, decade?
Yeah.
But for sports, when it comes to UConn, what's your first thought?
Women.
The women's basketball.
Absolutely.
You know, you don't think of football there, whereas at least Tennessee.
You have both. You have
the football team's had success over the decades, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think Tennessee is very knee-jerkish with, because we saw this in college football, that they cycled through a lot of head coaches for a while. And sometimes I think as a program, whoever the athletic director is over the entire athletic programs there, they seem to be very knee-jerkish. Like if somebody's not producing championships right away or championship appearances, they fire them.
I'll tell you what. I don't want to cut you off, but I'll tell you what. I think that that goes for the whole SEC, and I'll tell you what I call that. That's the Saban effect.
That's a good point.
You know, I feel like all of these athletic directors and all of these SEC schools, they bring in a coach, and they probably, in behind closed doors, say one thing. Beat Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Can you beat Alabama? And if you can't, it seems like they do move on. And they move on quick.
Yeah.
And to me, like, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, now I will give UT some slack because with Pruitt,
there
was reason they fired him.
Yes.
Yeah, I got it.
You know, but, you know, Pruitt wasn't their first coach after Fulmer.
No.
No.
You know, so, yeah, I mean, that definitely, I think with the SEC, you do see, I think, a much shorter leash in all sports compared to a lot of the other conferences.
Exactly, and I feel like sometimes that can possibly, I mean, look at Dabo Sweeney, that if it was knee-jerkish there may not have been championships in Clemson because he didn't produce right away. It took him a couple years for the program to build. And look at UT football now. They've got a good coach.
Heupel beat Saban.
Yeah.
So he's earned a long rope now.
But if they would have imagined that if they would have been knee-jerkish with him after the first year, you know.
Oh, sure.
So one other quick one. Western Kentucky's Steve Lutz. Well, he got his reward for taking the Hilltoppers to their first tournament appearance since 2013 by getting the Oklahoma State job. So he had taken Texas A&M Corpus Christi to 2 straight NCAA appearances. And then this year took Western Kentucky to their first appearance in a while. So congratulations to him moving up into the Big 12.
Did a great job for Western Kentucky.
Yeah. It's a shame it's 1 year and gone.
Yeah. We mentioned it, you know, the opening game that they played. I thought they had a great chance. They were there for a little while, and they just, you know, they couldn't hold on. But they did a good job.
All right. Well, good time for us to move on to our Dudes and Duds for the week.
All right. Well, my dude, I'm going to take him before anyone takes him, is Zach Edey, 41 points. Just completely dominant on both ends of the court. Offensive dominance, defensive dominance. I mean, extremely dominant performance over Tennessee.
All right. So for the first time in the history of the show, my dude is a dudette. It is Caitlin Clark.
Absolutely.
41 points, I think, also for Caitlin. Yep. And, I mean, we mentioned it earlier. I mean, at the when the lights were shining the brightest, she was fearless.
Yep.
And she took over that game and carried that team on her shoulders to a victory. So, Caitlin Clark.
Absolutely amazing performance.
Yep. So, there's a reason I write down multiple ones as options, because I knew
someone's taking Caitlin
Clark.
Someone's
going to take Caitlin Clark.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give mine to Astros pitcher Ronel Blanco, the first no-hitter of the season.
Good one.
Struck out 7, giving up 2 walks in Houston's 10-0 win over the Blue Jays on Monday. I mean, to me, it's like, it seems like in Major League Baseball, the single pitcher no-hitter is becoming so much more rare because pitchers aren't pitching complete games anymore. Yeah, yeah. Even when they're in a no-hitter, they're getting pulled after seven innings. You know?
Too much analytics.
Yeah. But I also want to give a nod to Maryland softball pitcher Courtney Weish. 19 strikeouts in a nine-inning complete game, giving up just two hits, no runs to Penn State.
Very nice.
Well, I have an honorable mention for Devin Booker, 52 points against the New Orleans Pelicans in a win that I didn't think Phoenix would get. I mean, I thought I wrote Phoenix off last week, and here they are battling.
On a side note, the no-hitter, I feel like it's ho-hum now. I don't know. It just, the luster to me is gone. Now, maybe it's because I didn't know who this guy was. I couldn't have picked him out in a crowd.
And to me, that's no-hitters I love.
Yeah, and I'm it's like, one of this guy you've never heard of.
Yeah.
So I did a little background on him. He had never gone more than six innings in a game in 25 starts. I mean, it's amazing. I will give this to baseball. It's the one sport that you can be king for a day in the whole league without ever being a Hall of Famer or a know a long time great player. Very rarely do we see in the NFL a guy that out of the blue has a 200 yard rushing day and we don't know who he is. But this is amazing that this guy did this. I just wish the luster was still there for the no hitter. It used to be such a big deal. I just don't feel like it is anymore.
All right. So our duds for the week, I'll throw mine out here first. I'm going to give it to the Oakland Athletics.
Yeah.
Their defense is horrible this year. They've already committed 13 fielding errors through their first five games of the season.
Yeah.
And the other night, five errors in just the first three innings and a 9-0 loss to the Red Sox on Monday.
Gotcha. Well, my dud goes to Draymond Green. I don't know how it's even possible to get ejected less than 4 minutes into a game, yet Draymond Green found a way to get ejected less than 4 minutes into a game in a crucial game that if they had lost that game, they would have been in some serious trouble. Now, thankfully, they won, but come on, man. I mean, your team clearly is better when you're on the court. I just don't know how you get ejected 4 minutes into a game for actually not fouling anybody, which means he actually intentionally picked a fight with the ref and got kicked out of the game. It's kind of shocking to me.
All right, so mine will go to, and I want to get his name 100% right, goalie Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. Four goals on nine shots last Wednesday night when we were here later in the evening. Four goals on nine shots.
That's a rough start.
It's not a good one.
No.
All right, three up, three down. Is that where we're going?
Yep. I'll go ahead and lead mine off.
All right.
Kenny, you're going to like this. I give one of mine to the Yankees. Starting the season with a five-game win streak, including a four-game sweep of the Astros. The Hurricanes, 8-1-1 in their last 10, keeping themselves in contention for the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. And the Mavs, 9-1 in their last 10. They climbed out of the play-in spots, and they're in line, looks like, to secure a playoff spot without having to be in the play-in tournament.
All right.
Impressive.
All right. My three up, the New York Yankees. 6-1 now. They just won again in 11 innings over Arizona. 5-0 start. First time 5-0 start since 1992. NC State basketball.
On both ends.
I mean, come on.
Yeah. Women and men.
Just wow. They're going to have a tall task, but they're in the Final Four. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely amazing. An 11 seed. And they came within, I think they were down to Virginia in the ACC tournament by three or four with 5 seconds left. And the kid on the line, Virginia, he missed the free throws, and they hit a tying three, and then they end up winning in overtime. That's how close they were to not making the tournament.
Yeah. That's, I mean, that's crazy that just one or two plays
got them here. I hate to say it. We'll see how it works out. But the Texans, Houston Texans. Now, I don't know how this is going to work out. We'll talk about the trade later for Stephon Diggs. But I will give them this credit. They're going for it here. Mm-hmm. They're putting their chips in. I always like. When a team goes for it, that I like. Mm-hmm. All right. That's my three up.
My three up. Houston Texans. I mean, listen, they got the quarterback, and now they're getting all the pieces around him on his rookie deal. This seems to be the formula a lot of teams employ. The Dallas Stars, 7 straight wins. They look like a team to be reckoned with as they vie for the president's.
Yeah, they're not going to get that, though.
They probably will.
They'll win the West.
Yeah.
They'll win the West.
And then UConn, 11 straight March Madness tournament wins.
Yeah.
11 straight. That's absolutely incredible.
All right.
All right. So my 3 down, I give my first one to Miami Marlins. Starting the season 0-6 through yesterday's games. The Flyers, 2-5-3 in their last 10. They're in danger of falling out of that playoff spot that they're in. I think they're only a point ahead of the second wild card team, who's also in their division. So if that team gets ahead of them, they could be out mm-hmm. completely. Mm-hmm. And the Mets, sorry, the only other team to not win a game so far this season. Rough start.
Yeah, well, my 3 down. The Buffalo Bills. What is this team doing? Are they trying to just tank? I mean,
oh, they're not tanking.
Well, who's on the team? I mean, they've given up defensive players. They've given up offensive players. I don't know who's on this team anymore.
Josh Allen.
That's it. Okay, I mean that is it.
All right.
And then the New York Mets, obviously being 0-4, not off to a good start. And the Miami Marlins being 0-7 off to an atrocious start. Both teams are terrible in baseball.
All right, my 3 down were the Philadelphia Flyers. They're gonna get themselves out of the wild card if they don't watch it. They're 0-5 in their last 5. The Mets 0-4. Boy, nothing made me happier than having the Yankees in the 3 up and having the Mets in the 3 down.
I know.
It's just so much fun.
Is it?
And finally, this one's a little odd, but it's the Kansas City Chiefs. Why? Rashee Rice, number one. I don't know why I always feel it's the Chiefs in these darn stories, but I don't get it over there with that organization. That being said, bigger problem. He signed Carson Wentz as the backup. Nothing spells doom for your franchise than signing Carson Wentz on your team.
If there's any coach that can work with that quarterback, it's Andy Reid.
We thought McVay could.
Well, I mean, Carson Wentz was not bad.
Then why is he being shipped again?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
he's a rental backup.
He's very capable.
No. And he's kind of like a rental car.
I'll just say this. I can't think of a quarterback who has ever played bad under Andy Reid. I actually can't think of one off the top of my head. Kevin Cobb, maybe. I mean, that you got to think of somebody like that. I mean, this is a guy who pulled Matt Moore out of basically teaching high
school.
But
McVay is the same. I mean, he had Goff. He has Stafford. He even made Wentz look pretty good. He had the other kid. What was that kid? Howe or whatever? Someone he had as the backup for when Stafford went down last year.
He was playing okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, why didn't he stay with Wentz?
I don't know. I mean, why didn't he? I mean, Baker Mayfield was very good for
him. That's true, too.
And he let him walk. Yeah, so I'm just saying, like, I mean, listen, I don't know. I don't think for McVay, but if I'm just saying Andy Reid is in that ilk. I don't know.
Yeah, no doubt.
I think this is a good move, actually. But I agree with you. He's bad juju.
You can't have him on the roster.
He's bad juju.
You can't do it.
Well, you know, if you're the Chiefs, your hope is you never have to see him anyways.
Yeah, that's true.
But I'm just saying, if Andy Reid can get Matt Moore out of teaching high school and he can go blow for blow with Aaron Rodgers,
I guess.
I'm just saying it's
very good. All right.
All right. Well, that takes us up to our Bet the Farm picks. And so, Kenny, it's funny. You know, when you did the Preds over the Coyotes for Thursday, I was thinking you took one of mine. But no, I actually, one of my options was the Rangers over the Coyotes, which I should have stuck with. But it didn't matter because I had the Stars over the Krakens for a win. Elijah had Celtics over the Hawks for a loss.
That made me so angry. that was so angry.
Weren't they angered. Up 30 at one point in that game? And
That was the game where that Hawks player, who I never even heard of, dropped like 45 points. Okay. And I'm going, what? Was it something Murray? I was just...
Yeah, and Kenny had gone with the Preds over the Coyotes, which unfortunately jinxed the Preds.
It sure did.
Thank you. You've started their losing streak.
I did.
Yeah.
Elijah must have rubbed off on you or
something.
I did. I just need to jinx the Yankees now.
Yeah. So this puts you guys at 2-2. I'm at 4-0. It's funny because you guys either both lose or both win.
That's a good point.
I don't like being associated with his picks.
I'll give mine for this week. I'm going to go with the Magic over the Hornets on Friday.
All right.
I'm going with the Bucks over the Raptors on Friday.
All right. I'll take Friday, and I'm going to take the New York Rangers over the Detroit Red Wings.
By the way, just happened. A fight just broke out between the Devils and the Rangers, and 8 players were ejected.
Well, that's not news to know the Devils and the Rangers.
I know, but just to hear 8 players getting ejected is kind of something.
That's old-time hockey.
I agree.
There you go.
All right. So there was a bit of a breaking news today, a big trade. In the NFL? Well, maybe a big one, right?
No, it was a biggie.
It was a biggie.
So
for better or for worse, yeah, if you want to put it that way.
So Stephon Diggs moving to Texas.
You know, when I first heard he was moving to Texas, that was the first hint dropped. Part of me went, oh, I just hope he doesn't come to Dallas. I don't want that in Dallas, because if Josh Allen has trouble with Stephon Diggs and Josh Allen force feeds this guy the ball, how in the world is a receiving core gonna mesh with CeeDee Lamb and Stephon Diggs? That sounds like a disaster waiting to happen. So when I found out it was the Texans, I was like, okay,
dodge the bullet.
But I think this is a good move because there really is no – there's good wide receivers in Houston, but now you're getting like a go-to wide receiver along with
You better.
Yeah, that's
true. Or you're going to hear about it.
That's true. That's very true. I completely agree with you on that one, Kenny. I think this is either going to be really good or this is going to be – you know, like Terrell Owens to the Cowboys, where it was good for 1 year and then it ended up imploding.
Yeah.
That's kind of more what I'm thinking. But I think for 1 year, this could be extremely good.
Yeah.
And that might be all Houston needs, I think, is as crazy as that sounds, a team that we thought was going to be a bottom feeder for forever turned it. They're going for it. I mean, they've signed defensive players, they've signed offensive players. They've signed linemen. I mean, this is a team. They've gotten running backs. They are gearing up for a big run. So I guess they really think C.J. Stroud is the guy.
Yeah.
And now let's go for it. I mean, and you know, my hat's off to them. I mean,
yeah, I like the move from the front office standpoint, saying let's go for it. I mean, you mentioned it earlier. You've got the quarterback under the rookie deal. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got a team that overachieved, and you go, huh, maybe we're ready to do this. Now, I agree with you. This is going to be looked back on as either, what a great trade. It got them to the, whatever, AFC Championship, a Super Bowl, whatever it is. Or we're going to look at this and go, what a disaster. Stephon Diggs ruined C.J. Stroud's confidence.
And you know,
so it's one of those two.
It might be both. You know, I never think about that because think about something.
I mean, it's possible, but boy, oh boy. Well, C.J. Stroud looks really good. I wouldn't have done this. I don't like the diva receiver with a young quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, because I lived this with Tony Romo.
Yeah.
I mean, Tony Romo was a young quarterback. And they brought Terrell Owens was there. And listen, Tony Romo had his best statistical season with Terrell Owens. Yes.
That's my quarterback.
But then it imploded.
Yes.
You get my point? So it could end up being both, where it's like
we
get C.J. Stroud has his best statistical season and the Houston Texans make a very deep playoff run.
Yeah.
Say AFC Championship game.
Okay. And then
but then next year it implodes. Yeah. I mean, you know, it could be both.
It's possible. I just don't like the Stephon Diggs diva aspect with a young quarterback.
I agree with you.
I'm thrilled this wasn't the Titans with Will Levis. I don't want this. I don't want that possibility of a young quarterback feeling pressured to throw the ball to someone, feeling I don't know what the word, overshadowed by
yes.
this. Now, he, one time, that's fine. Twice is something different. He didn't get along with Kirk Cousins. He didn't get along with Josh Allen.
Well, it wasn't Kirk Cousins.
It was Kirk Cousins.
Was it?
Yes.
I thought it was.
Yes, it was Kirk Cousins. They did not
mesh. I thought it was Case Keenum. No, you're right. You're right. It was.
And now Josh Allen. Now, these are both, we can honestly say, two of the better quarterbacks in this league. Yeah,
definitely. Two of the top quarterbacks. I mean,
come on now. You got to get along with somebody somewhere at some point. I mean, this is crazy. And now you're going over to Houston where you have a young guy who really overachieved. Mm-hmm. And
with not a lot of top number one.
That's right.
Top of the draft
receivers. And young receivers who really excelled for him. Now, how are they going to be taking this with Diggs in there in that locker room? And Diggs on the field saying, give me the ball. I mean, yeah. I don't like it. I don't like it if I'm... I like it if I'm Stroud and he works well with me, but the downside possibility here, I don't like at all.
I just
don't like that
at all. And like I said, you could get a situation like a Romo and Owens.
Where that's the one and the other together. Now, they gave up a second round pick. The Bills rather will get a second round pick.
And you know, here's the thing.
Next year, by the way. That's decent pick to get for Diggs. He didn't want to be there.
No, he didn't.
And they don't want him there.
But I applaud the Bills from this standpoint. They bought high for Diggs.
Yeah.
And they sold high for Diggs.
Yeah, they did.
So they did a good job here. But on the flip side of this, I know you tell me they got Josh Allen.
They
did. But part of me goes, I mean, they better draft a receiver in this draft or something because, I mean, what are you going to run? They're going to have to run like a two tight end formation or something because they don't really have receivers on this team. And I kind of go, that's, you know, in a division that has one of the best cornerbacks in the league and you're going to run, say, a bottom tier receiver out there, how is that exactly going to work? I don't know. On one hand, I like the move because you got a disgruntled guy out of there. But on the other hand, I go, what's your plan here? Because you already let Gabe Davis walk out the door, who was your receiver too. So,
and now they're stuck with Curtis Samuel and Mac Hollins. So where does that put this team if they don't find a way in the draft to address wideout? Now, they do have Dalton Kincaid, who is a phenom at tight end for them. And they do rely on Knox. But here's the problem. We keep saying, what holds back Buffalo every year, we feel? And we've agreed with this. When Josh has to play hero ball.
Yeah.
Well, now he's set up to play superhero ball because now he has one less weapon. We've mentioned it before. He has no running back with him.
Well, so, now I mean, towards the back end of maybe that's what they're going to do. Maybe they're going to run the ball and do a two tight end formation.
Maybe that's what they're gonna do. But I don't know how that succeeds anymore. We tried it here. You know, it's very difficult. Now, I think their window literally is just a smidge open, the Bills.
Think, like you said, if you've got an elite quarterback like Allen, you've always got a chance.
You do, but he
can't catch the ball himself. Yeah, he's got to throw it to somebody.
I'm just getting this Dan Marino feel over there now with the Allen years. They're going to have these we're going to look back on these games where we were so close, and then
bam.
And then we've spent 12 years with Josh Allen and never got a Super Bowl or even an appearance.
You see, to me, and I've said, it's funny, Josh Allen reminds me of one quarterback, a Hall of Fame, one of the greats. He reminds me of John Elway, the way he plays.
Yeah, but Elway got those rings.
But he got them at the end.
Yeah, but
and
still,
that could be. But that could be what Allen does. Yeah. It might be something that he has his team in it. They're competitive. And then at the end of his career, they get a team around him and he wins. But I agree with you. That window's shut.
I'll give it a slight open.
By an
but
inch.
That's about it. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's okay. About it.
Well, the problem with the window there for the Bills is that you're in an era right now where, okay, look at what the Texans have done with C.J. Stroud. Mm-hmm. Look what the Chiefs are doing. Mm-hmm. If Burrow is healthy.
Yeah.
Look what the Ravens do with Lamar. I mean,
yeah,
you're talking about you have zero depth. You have very little receiving talent.
Yeah.
And you're in a stacked AFC.
Well, and you're not even, you didn't even address their own division there, where the Jets, for some reason, get them every year and give them fits.
Aaron Rodgers is going to be there this year.
He's going to be there this
year. Miami, say what you want about them, but they are going to get you 10 wins, probably.
I mean, think about it. If the Miami gets 12 wins and Buffalo messes around and ends up losing, Lord forbid, they lose two games to the Jets, which is a possibility. Yeah. I mean, they were almost out of it this past year, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like
they had to fight their way back into playoff contention. The Bills, I just think this was a addition by subtraction. This happens a lot with a diva wide receiver, mm-hmm. and I just felt, he disappeared down the stretch, Diggs. And
he had the really bad drop against the Chiefs where it hit him right in the breadbasket.
Yeah, and I just feel like they felt that's enough. We just can't, and if Diggs was a quiet guy, a Marvin Harrison guy.
Like even CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah, CeeDee Lamb guy. Just go out there and do your job and you'll get your touches and we're going to win this thing together, guy. I don't think this happens, but this is the second team that said, you're great. We feel this is good. We're in a good window and still lets him go.
Yeah. Well, and obviously Minnesota's not missing getting rid of him.
They found Justin Jefferson. Yeah. So there is life after Stephon Diggs.
Yeah. I mean, the Bills' best hope is that they can trade up.
Yeah.
But, who's going to be willing to give up those picks?
They have so maybe many. The Titans would like that this worked out for them. Maybe this Texans move works out for the Titans. The Bills come up to 7. And offer a few picks that help us in depth where we can still get the tackle and maybe add some other things.
Well, here's the other thing I'm looking at because, yes, they need to address wide receiver, the Bills do. They also need to address cornerback.
Yeah.
They don't have a cornerback. They don't have a receiver. They don't.
And, there's a lot of positions on that team. Their coach is on a hot seat. There's no doubt about that. Yeah, I think this is their window is about to close season. Mm-hmm. I think this season for them, especially after this trade, is
not good.
I'm not even going to say it's a 17-game season. I think for them it's going to be a 6 or 7-game season, meaning if this team comes out the gate 3-3, you may see their coach launched. And I think that does shut the window finally, and they say we're resetting completely. But it sucks to do that when you've got a generational guy like Josh Allen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kenny Mann, Phil Tucker, Elijah Jacobs, we are all here tonight. And joining us now on the incredible invention by Alexander Graham Bell, Pete Weber, the voice of the Nashville Predators. And I don't want to leave this out because I know Pete, he's in the Buffalo Baseball Hall of Fame. Yeah, I think you should absolutely be introduced by that all the time. Hall of Fame. Listen, if I'm in the Nathan's Hot Dog Hall of Fame, I want to be introduced by that. Pete Weber,
so
thank
you're like
you.
Joey Chestnut.
Yes, thank I know. And I hate to say I wish I could be Joey Chestnut, but Pete, thank you so much for joining us here on Triple Play Sports. We do appreciate your time. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, thank you. Looking forward to, and what I'm doing here as I speak with you is finishing up some of my work for tomorrow night's game against St. Louis.
Yeah, and so let's get right to it, shall we? Okay, so the Preds coming off at one moment, we had the 16-0-2 run and a streak that basically, I would say, woke up everyone in the NHL to say, hey, what's this about? Don't want to play these guys in the playoffs, right? And now since then, an 0-3 skid. And the question I had for you, Pete, and you've been around this game forever, is how hard is it not to have a letdown after an extended streak? I mean, this wasn't 4 or 5 games. We're talking, 18 games over gosh knows how many nights. How hard is it to not let down once it's broken?
It's basic. Well, I don't know that it's hard to not let down there. The players definitely want to keep on going in a positive direction. But the fact of the matter is mathematics catch up to you. And after you've gone 18 games without dropping one in regulation, the law of averages has to catch up at some point.
Yeah.
Now, how much of reversion to the norm is going to come up as a result of all of this. And I think that's what really helps set up tomorrow night's matchup against St. Louis as well as it does.
And what a game. That's, and you know, for standings alone, the game against the Blues. Look at Pete throwing out all the mathematics. What, did you study calculus at Notre Dame, Pete? What's going on here? I mean,
if it weren't for the engineering students across the hallway from me in the dorm, I never would have gotten through it.
All right. All right. Okay, so the Preds, though, even after the 0-3 skid we have right now, 43-28-4, and I'll tell you what, going into this season, any fan would sign up for that in a heartbeat, and I think we're all very pleasantly surprised at how a young team with a new coach, and here we go, and we think, oh, we're going to be rebuilding, and oh, we're going to be out of it for a little while. Well, oh no, number one in the wild card spot. How surprised are you, Pete, at how quickly this team gelled together and the chemistry that they have seemed to form with each other?
It's been amazing to watch. And have I been surprised? The bottom line to your question, absolutely, I have been. Yeah. I did not have, to paraphrase a great book title from my high school years, Great Expectations for this team. But they have come through, and they have come through in fine fashion. Philip Forsberg, fantastic year. Roman Josi, maybe a little bit of a slow start, but now others around the league, not just me, not just the Predators broadcast on radio and television, mentioning him once again as he should be a strong candidate for the award as the top defenseman in the league.
Yeah.
And that comes out of virtually out of nowhere. It came out of the darkness, if you will. It's like if you saw the movie Apocalypse Now, you're going through the jungle and coming out.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. You mentioned about how surprised you were, and as I am too, pleasantly surprised. Do you have a player? Now, we mentioned Josi. Unfortunately, when you're a great player, we almost come to expect greatness, and he has done that. Is there a player on this team, Pete, that you look at and say, I am surprised at how good this season has gone for this player?
I guess I'd have to say Gus Nyquist, because I knew he was an accomplished veteran, but I didn't know he was going to be as accomplished as he has been to this point in time. And he has been a very big part of the team's number one line. He and Ryan O'Reilly and Forsberg, they've been absolutely fantastic working together, and I've really enjoyed watching him. He came up with maybe the critical goal in the comeback win against the Vegas Golden Knights a week or so ago.
Pete Weber's with us right here on Triple Play Sports. Myself, Kenny Mann, Phil Tucker, Elijah Jacobs. Pete, by the way, I'm going to tell the guys, not that they don't know, but over 2,000 games now called for the Nashville Predators. I mean, does that number amaze you as well sometimes when you hear that number?
It does, but let's also consider that in my career, which I've been very fortunate as long as it's gone, I also have done like 25 to 2,600 minor league baseball games and everything else. You add all that together, and I have clearly earned my gray hair.
Buffalo Bisons, right?
Right.
Seattle Dukes. Supersonics, by the way. I remember that. We mentioned that last time you were on. It was a long time ago, but we did talk about that.
It was great being in Seattle again for the second time since the Predators have had them in the league together, and to go back into the building where I did some Sonics games, but now bears little, if any, resemblance to what I recall from it.
The Supersonics, if we were, right?
Yes.
Yes. Jack Sigma, is that right?
Am I Jack Sigma?
I'm aging Lonnie myself, Shelton. But yes, Jack Sigma, that's right.
Gus Williams, Downtown Freddie Brown.
That was the year, Pete, you can educate me. Was it 78 against the what then were the Washington Bullets? Am I right on that?
Yes, you are correct.
What a series that was.
Lenny Wilkins coaching the Sonics and Dick Motta, the former Chicago Bulls coach, who was the coach of the Bullets at that point in time. Fantastic series. Absolutely.
Okay.
Dennis Johnson, part of all that.
That's right. Dennis Johnson. Phil Tucker, do you have anything for Pete?
Well, I was just going to say, ask you, with the way the season's gone for the Predators, is there any, do you draw any parallels to any of the other, you know, I mean, you've been able to cover quite a few great hockey franchises and seasons. Does this remind you of any certain team you've seen before?
The way that streak went. And I'm not saying they can't resume it again, but the way it went, it really reminded me of 2016, 2017 Preds, mm-hmm. when found a way to get to the Cup final by being the last team to make the playoff field, yeah. and then sweeping through Chicago, taking care of St. Louis and Anaheim before facing Pittsburgh.
I'll tell you the one thing, Pete, that it reminds me of, and I thought about this a lot today when I knew you were coming on. Now, I grew up in New York, and I was an Islander fan back then.
Yep.
And the
I'm watching the Islanders right now.
Yeah, and the Islanders in 81-82, that season, that was their third cup. Now, during that season, and you probably remember this, they had a 15-game winning streak that year. And,
yes.
And that was the days when there were no anything other than wins and losses and ties. So they yes. had 15 in a row. And they ended up winning their third cup that year. And the thing I thought at a parallel this Predators team, and tell me if I'm on the right track here, what I felt this streak did for the Predators is something in their mental capacity that they could turn around and say, we can do that again. We're capable yeah. of 10, 12 wins. Well, you got to win 16 to win a cup. So knowing that your team right. and the guys around you are capable of putting together those wins back to back, and they played playoff teams, the Predators. So
yes.
knowing they can do that, I just feel like it was a massive success for them mentally going forward to the playoffs.
Yeah, to give them confidence. That's one of those things. You can't have confidence until you found a way of earning it, and that's what they did. And so you grew up an Islanders fan.
I did. Now, granted, Pete, those guys now in 81, 82, those four cups now, we had, you know, Tinelli and Bossy and Billy Smith. And listen, you could tell these guys who were sitting here with me, you didn't go in front of Billy Smith in that goal crease.
No. No, it wasn't a good idea.
No, it wasn't.
You were very well protected.
No.
But I got to tell you something else about that.
Go ahead.
I was with the LA Kings at the time. And
so Butchie Goring was there, right?
I was the guy who was, in addition to doing color commentary,
yeah.
I was the team travel coordinator.
Okay.
So a trade was made late in the 79-80 season of Butch Goring
That's right.
to the Islanders, and I was the guy that had to take him to the airport in Montreal, as it turned out, to send him on to join the Islanders, and we're talking in the cab going out to Dorval Airport, and he's going, do you think I'm going to a good place? Which I think, yes, you are. I mean, and of course, all he got out of that was four cups.
Four cups? That's right, four cups in a row. And then obviously they had a shot at the fifth, and then along comes Wayne Gretzky and the Oilers with their own dynasty at that moment. You know, Pete, it's funny. The thing I thought about the other day about that team, because it came up because I remember seeing that the U.S. hockey team, I think it was the 44th or 45th anniversary of the, I'm sorry, it was of the 1980. Yeah, my gosh, it is 45 yeah. years of the 1980 Lake Placid win. And the Islanders, you know how those players kind of scattered around the league after that gold medal. The Islanders ended up with Kenny Morrow. And,
yeah, and he had that rare double, right?
That's right.
The Olympic
right.
gold and the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
And the guy that followed him on the team from 84 that played over in Sarajevo, which I covered, yeah. was a guy named Patty LaFontaine.
Patty LaFontaine.
And, last Holy Saturday night was the anniversary of him scoring the quintuple overtime goal or the quadruple overtime goal
against the Capitals. That's right. Listen to that. Me and Pete going back. Hey, man, I love when I meet someone who's my age. I mean, that's the only good thing. Okay, Pete. So, listen, obviously, we're all on board here. We're hoping that the Preds have that run in them, as you mentioned, the 2016-2017 season. The question I had for you is there a quality you see in this team, the one now, that gives you hope for a deep playoff run? Is there anything about this particular group that you go, you know what, I see something here?
Yeah, it's belief. They have belief, and they all have belief in what they're wearing on a cap that's very popular in the room right now.
Yeah.
And the phrase on the cap is relentless.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They do not give up.
No, and now granted, I'm you know, we do this show and I'm very critical of all the teams I love. God, we got to fix this penalty kill. Now, that's the only bugaboo that worries me going into the playoffs, obviously, because in the playoffs that is so overwhelmingly, you know, a problem if you can't fix that. But these teams are fantastic they're going to face.
Yes, they are. I mean, and they wouldn't be there if they weren't.
No.
Right? So
no,
that's the whole thing.
Okay. We don't want to keep you too long, but I do know you're a Bills fan. Am I correct?
Yes, you are.
All right.
And I'm a little upset today.
Okay, that's what I wanted to ask you. So, you know, I'm not a Bills fan. You're a Bills fan. What did you think of this today with Stephon Diggs being, you know, shipped out to the Houston Texans?
For just low-round draft picks for a guy who is such a big part of the team's success. And first I thought, wait a minute, is this April 1st? I took a look at the timestamp right away on the bulletin that I got, and I thought I couldn't believe that it was being done. And it's kind of like what happened years and years ago when the Bills gave up Bobby Chandler to the Raiders, and that was the most sure-handed receiver they had. And now I'm thinking, in a way, not only is Stephon Diggs sure-handed, but he's also extraordinarily fast. So to whom will Josh Allen be throwing the football this fall?
Well, either Dalton Kincaid or, I guess, himself at this point, unless they address that in the draft.
He has done that once.
Yeah, actually he has. Yes. You also, and I found this extremely impressive, you worked with Marv Levy, sir.
Yes. Matter of fact, I'll see Marv when we go to Chicago next week. No. I usually at least talk to him on the phone when we're in town there. And then he oftentimes will say, well, why don't we go to my restaurant? And he owns a piece of Harry Carey's restaurants
there. Oh, does he?
I did not know that.
Yeah. Oh.
98 years young, by the way, Marv Levy, 98 right. years young. So, I mean, look, you know, we appreciate you being here. You know, I don't know if you remember from the last time you were here, but I like to always end my interviews with something fun. Are you ready for that, Mr. Weber?
Absolutely.
Okay. We'll do this, call this one pick and choose. How's that? So pick and choose, Pete Weber. For the rest of your life, no red lights, okay? You never hit a red light. Or you never have to fill your car with gas again. You never have to go to a gas station. Which would you pick?
I think I would never want to fill my car with gas again because I did it today and I think I had to take out a mortgage. However, your question means something different
That's
to a hockey
true.
Announcer.
That's true.
To a hockey announcer, I mean, I like red lights when they go on to the Predators.
Okay, all right, very good.
Good one.
All right, and then the other question I have for you is if you could pick a food and make it contain no calories. Now, I asked this of the guys a few weeks ago. Any food, you can make it have zero calories, meaning obviously you can eat this and whenever you want, as much as you want. What food would you pick?
Well, I have to admit I'm a salmonaholic.
Really?
And not that salmon is that high in caloric content.
No.
But I absolutely love it, and that would be nice to know that there is no price to pay for consuming it.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. I, you know, I've been eating sardines a lot lately. I got to tell you, they say the health benefits are wonderful, but I've lost a lot of friends, Pete. I don't know what it is. Nobody comes around me. All right,
Except
the cat. Yes, he actually loves me. And the last one for you, sir, is you, Pete Weber, are on a desert island. What record or album do you bring with you, and what movie do you bring with you?
Well, number one, I'm going to bring Slapshot. You know, you have to know that.
Paul Newman, there you go.
As probably the Beatles White Album.
Beatles White Album. Well, there you go. Okay. Wow, Pete's just such a well-rounded guy. He's got everything
Absolutely.
Going on. Yeah. All right. Well, Phil, do you have anything else for Mr. Weber?
Well, I love the world of sports casting and play-by-play. Has there been a team that you've covered over the years that, you know, they didn't win a lot of games, but they were just a lot of fun to call the games for?
I would probably have to say, and it was 3 years after they won the title, but that Sonics team was an awful lot of fun for me. I mean, just to be able to shoot the ball on a daily basis with the head coach, Lenny Wilkins, who I followed growing up as a St. Louis Hawks fan, and he was a guard on that team. And then Jack Sikma, whose games I had done in high school in Illinois, that was special for me. And then Billy Hanslick, who had been with Digger Phelps at Notre Dame when I was in grad school there.
Yeah, I mean, those are unbelievable. Elijah Jacobs, do you have anything before I let Pete go?
The only question I had is, you know, you're a Buffalo Bills fan, and Kenny and I were talking earlier about Josh Allen. I compared him to John Elway, the way he plays the game, his size, his arm talent.
Sure.
And I told Kenny, based off the way the Bills are going, I see Josh Allen kind of having a similar career to John Elway. What are your thoughts on that maybe towards the end of his career, they might put a team around him, because the way this is going,
well, I'm sure hoping so.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
But I don't feel he's close to the end, though, Josh Allen. That's
no,
the only
no,
thing.
No. But I'm just saying, John Elway in his prime had to carry some pretty mediocre teams, and I think that's what Josh Allen's going to have to do here.
Hey, Josh Allen's an incredible football player, and now unfortunately he's going to have to be a more incredible football player unless they address that. All right, listen.
Well, Tracy Ringlesby is a good friend of mine, the baseball writer for Baseball America.
Right.
He is a Wyoming grad. He called me when the Bills drafted him and told me, I hope I don't have to sell you on him because he might have the best arm I've ever seen. Baseball or football.
Wow.
So, and then for Elway, I saw him play for the Oneonta Yankees one night in Batavia, New York. He went down to the right field corner to get a one-hopper off the wall, turn around, and throws to third base, and the runner trying to go first to third is out by at least 12 feet.
Oof.
And his throw was never more than 12 feet off the ground.
Unbelievable. Holy now, you know, it, that makes me angry because the Yankees drafted John, and George wanted him. George really thought he had a shot at him, and it just didn't work out. I mean, but you know what? We've got 28 championships. It all works out for us.
But I got to tell you, had the Broncos held on him, or had the Broncos not traded for him, we don't know what happens because there is no way he was going to play for Rod Cush.
No, there was not. They made it very clear. And, you know, and then we went down the years and Eli kind of did the same kind of maneuvering. And and we may, well, we thought for a little while here we may get that this year with Caleb Williams, but it looks like everything, he's fine with the Bears and whatnot. The only question I'm reluctant to bring this up, and I'll make this the last one, but I just thought about it. And I was an Oiler fan growing up as a young man, and they are now the Titans. So we have both moved to the area. But you being a Buffalo fan brings up some very horrible memory in my life in 1993. Were you there in any way? Were you involved?
Game?
Yes, the Wild
I was in the broadcast
game.
Booth.
You see
I was
that?
In the broadcast booth, yeah. And I had to call our traffic reporter, because people were leaving at halftime. At halftime, it was 28-3.
That's right.
And had to put him back up in the air. And then shortly thereafter became 35-3.
That's right. Bubba McDowell.
Tipped off the hands
that's
of,
right.
Keith McKellar and Bubba McDowell
yards.
Returned.
Bubba McDowell goes the other way, 58 yards. And I said, oh, this is done. Oh, this is an embarrassment. Oh, this is over. And now in my life, Pete, I've met 800,000 people who tell me they were at that game. So I don't know what's going on over there in Buffalo, but everybody was at the game. But listen, I mean, that had to be an amazing thing to witness, because even I myself, watching it go down, just kept saying, I don't believe what I'm watching here.
Right. It's kind of like the great Jack Buck quote, right? After
that's
Kirk
right.
Gibson's home run
I
in the
I don't believe
series.
What I just saw. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I
and,
mean,
I think all of us were that way.
Yeah, unfortunate for me. But we got you back with the Music City Miracle.
Yes, you did.
Although it wasn't.
And just so you know, I was with Rudy Kalas before that game, helping him do his pregame show.
Yeah.
And we were playing the replays of that Bills comeback.
Right.
And, you know, hours later, Music City Miracle.
So when you watched that, when you watched the Music City Miracle game itself, were you one of the fans at that point, or at least, you know, you being a Bills fan, did you feel that Flutie should have started that game?
Without question.
Okay.
And yes, I was in the press box seeing that, but I got to say this, to be fair to all concerned, I did not think that was a forward lateral at all. I thought that was right on the line.
Yeah, and it ends up being, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it was down the line how they ended up looking at it. But I always felt as an Oiler fan, or rather as a Titan fan at the time, that I was thrilled that Rob Thomas was starting for the Bills, to be quite honest.
Sure.
I mean, Doug Flutie to me was just a gamer. That guy showed up when the lights were the brightest. I was glad he was on the sideline. But that
it was
being,
like TJ used to say, Tommy Jackson said, Doug Flutie does one thing. He wins.
That's absolutely right. And so I was kind of glad that he was sitting there that day. Well, listen, we don't want to take up too much more of your time. Pete, we can't tell you how much we appreciate you
absolutely.
Showing up here and being a part of this tonight. The voice of the Nashville Predators. By the way, next week, I think we're having the voice of the Tennessee Titans, Mike Heath. All I have to do, Phil, is get the voice of the Nashville Sounds, whoever that may be. And I've done I've done the whole triple play here. But
you want me to light him up for you?
Yes, please. So, Pete Weber, thank you so very much. very much, and obviously we're watching and rooting for the Predators as best we can every night, and I'm hoping for a long playoff run. And thank you, sir, so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Could you answer one question for me?
Okay.
About the title of your show.
Yeah.
Was there some particular triple play in your baseball past that came up that led to that sort of tribute you're giving it?
No. And to be for all honesty, the name I came up with for this show, Triple Play, was only because there were three gentlemen here, myself, Phil, and Elijah.
You said three gentlemen.
I did say gentlemen.
Gentlemen, I don't know about that.
I don't know about that. And because I wanted to cover local, national, and worldwide sports, I felt it was a triple play in both ways.
Okay.
So, but that was really it. Listen, what can I say? We really hope to have you back on again. You're phenomenal. I love just being able to reminisce with you about all of the different aspects of your career. I hope you had a great time, and we appreciate you, sir.
I did, and thank you very much, gentlemen. And see there, I said gentlemen.
All right, everybody. Thank you, Pete Weber from the Nashville Predators. What a great night we've had. Pete Weber, the voice of the Nashville Predators, was with us. Had a lot of fun. We really enjoyed that. We hope to have Pete back on again. Just a great time. And we're all, our eyes are on the tube watching the Predators and their hopes for a cup. You never know. You never know, Phil, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's funny. He mentioned how much it reminds him of the 2017 team. When I asked that question, that's kind of where I was going with it, because there's a lot about the way this team is mm-hmm. playing that reminds me of that, because you had Forsberg and Yossi,
mm-hmm.
and then you kind of had all these guys that were just breaking out. You had Arvidsson just kind of making a breakout. And to me, it kind of feels, now, not that I'm saying I expect them to go to the Cup, not that I don't expect them to go to the finals, but there's just a lot about that vibe that 2017 team had that this team seems to have.
In a way, actually, I think Forsberg is better now than he was back then. And I think that is a key difference. Because to me, when that run was made, Forsberg was, I don't think he was a rookie, but he was not, he was a young player at that time. Now he's coming into his own, and I think he really could be a difference maker for a potential run.
Yeah, the only similarities, and I see the similarities, I get it. The only thing I can say is that during our run in 2016-2017, Pekka Rinne was out of his mind.
Yeah.
And you're going to need that, as you always do in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and you're going to need Juuse Saros to duplicate that type of a performance. Can he? Absolutely. He's so capable of doing it. It's just, will he? And that's really what it comes down to.
Well, and I think for him, it seems like the last couple times they've made the playoffs, he's kind of taken another step in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the team around him took a step backwards in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Well, the last big playoff run the Predators made, I mean, losing Juuse Saros going into it is not ideal. That was crushing. So, I mean, I don't really count that run, because they went up against the Stanley Cup champions in the first round, and they didn't have Juuse Saros. Yeah. So, to me, that's really not a good run to judge them on. I think.
But we'll be watching, and we'll be updating as we go, as the Preds make their last push here. I think they've got 7 games left for the Stanley Cup. All right, fill in the blank time. Elijah has fill in the blanks. I'm worried, but let's just go forward with Elijah's fill in the blanks.
All right. Well, let's start off with this. Well, I'm going to ask you guys this: the NFL team right now that you think is the biggest threat to the Kansas City Chiefs?
Who do
you,
today? Yeah. So you're saying today?
Fill that in. Who do you think it is?
Phil, if you have one, go ahead. I'm thinking.
Yeah, this is going to sound crazy to say, but I think the Texans right now. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking Texans, but after talking to Kenny, I'm 50-50 on it. A team I'm going to throw at you that could be scary. Now, they wouldn't meet this team till potentially the Super Bowl, but Green Bay scares me because you got another year of experience with a young team. Jordan Love played really, really good. By the way, he went to Arrowhead and beat them in a primetime game. Yeah. So, I mean, he's not scared. He's kind of a fearless quarterback. And I go, anytime you got a quarterback who's somewhat fearless, I'm always kind of nervous when that's
I'm
going
to go Baltimore. And the reason is Derrick Henry. Now, it's an all-in move, kind of like we were just mentioning about the Texans. If Henry is healthy and somewhat dominant, that that could be headaches for a lot of teams to deal with.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Maybe a game in Baltimore in the playoffs, Kansas City there. I don't know. I guess that's possible. But, you know, Lamar is the issue.
See, that's the problem I looked at. Yeah. I thought Baltimore, but Lamar's got to prove something to me because that was an ugly meltdown.
Detroit, I mean, you know.
That's another good one. That's another good one. They're kind of fearless themselves. Yeah. To me, I just think, as weird as this sounds, if the 49ers win the NFC, there's no doubt in my mind the Chiefs are going to beat them because I just look at a team that just for some reason is allergic to that game. I don't know why it is, but they constantly shoot themselves in the foot in that game.
Yeah. Well, we know it won't be the Cowboys, so that's a good thing.
Okay. You know, speaking of that.
No, Cowboy question.
No.
Go ahead.
The team most likely to regress in this upcoming NFL season is blank.
Regression.
Come on, go ahead and say it.
I won't say the Cowboys. I think they'll be there with
with
the Eagles. Now, there's a team that I could see having more problems if A.J. Brown can't get his head on
straight.
There's
another receiver I didn't think about. He's another one.
He's another diva, and he has hurt Jalen Hurts. There's no doubt about it.
In a weird way, he's kind of worse than Diggs because he's more vocal than Diggs. Diggs was pouty. This guy's actually vocal.
Phil, you got a regression team?
I would put the Eagles as a risk.
Okay.
I think regression, I would say the Bills.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we just talked about them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Boy. It's tough to say because we still need to see the draft.
Yeah.
Well, I got one here. I'm going to say the Cleveland Browns. Listen, I think the minute Deshaun Watson goes back into that starting lineup, I see disaster in their future, and I do not see a 12-win season for them. I got the Cowboys as a potential just because everything about them is going to hinge on the draft. If they don't nail the draft, this team is...
Also, for me, the Buccaneers. I think Baker overachieved, and...
it's true.
I'd like to see Baker do that two times in a row. So let's see.
I agree with that. All right. The NBA team. This one's specifically for you, Kenny.
Oh, no.
The NBA team.
The Knicks.
That will challenge the Denver Nuggets in the Western Conference.
Oh, in the Western Conference.
Will be blank. Because I think the East is kind of a foregone conclusion at this point, unless something changes that I don't see. But I'm kind of curious, who do you think is going to...
Minnesota?
Think so?
Yeah.
With
SGA, is it? Carl Anthony Towns, right?
Carl Anthony Towns, yeah.
Minnesota's played great. I don't know. Dallas, I mean, you know, you can never count Luka out.
And Luka's playing pretty
good. He's playing great. He's got MVP qualities going. But if you're asking me, does someone beat Denver? No.
Well, actually, this is going to shock you. I see the Lakers getting back there again. For some reason, this team... Listen, they're a 7 seed in name only. Let's be honest. Yeah. They've got a lot of firepower on that team. I think, that being said, if they do end up playing Denver, I think it's going to be a short series. But
all right. I think Oklahoma City could give
SGA is having Shedeur Gilgeous-Alexander having a very good season.
He is.
That's a good one. I like that. All right. The NBA player.
Did you ever notice when Elijah does fill in the blanks, his voice goes very, very high when he does the question? I love it. Go ahead.
I go over to Mickey Mouse mode.
He does. Yeah. He goes,
all right.
You ever notice
the NBA player who has so far this year been the biggest disappointment in your
NBA
opinion?
Player disappointment?
Yeah, one that there was high expectations for that you just think it's just been disappointing.
Disappointing player. I'm not a big NBA guy, so when it comes to guys that underachieved who I thought would achieve more, I'm probably not going to give you a lot of names here. Ja Morant?
Well, he hasn't played.
He's had the injuries, right?
Yeah.
He's just, to me, I'll throw one out there overall.
I'm going to throw Damian Lillard out there. Listen, I mean, when he came to Milwaukee, everyone thought this was the match made in heaven. Mm-hmm. You got the three-point shooter with the big guy in the middle, and it has looked rocky at best. I mean, there are nights when they look really good, and then there are nights where they're just bad. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know what's up with that team. And it's really Lillard, because Giannis is still playing the same. Lillard's the one I'm not really understanding what's
going on. Jordan Poole also for me. That's a good one. I really thought was heading towards a superstar career. And
he's just disappeared this
seems
year.
Seems to have just gone away ever since Draymond punched him.
Yeah. You got one, Phil?
Honestly, for me, the NBA, it's tough for me to say because I don't really pay enough attention to the offseason to say, okay, here's who's hyped, here's who's the expectation is high. But I would agree with you with Jordan Poole.
Jordan Poole was one that we did speak about a lot here about who we thought.
It's almost
was,
like when Green punched him, he just knocked the confidence right out of him.
It really did.
All right, here comes
another question.
You ever notice? The President's Trophy Cup winner this year will be blank.
I think it's going to be the Rangers.
Really?
I do. I think they played so well, so consistently. Now, I wouldn't be shocked if I think the Bruins are right there still again. I don't think they want any part of it.
No.
I think they have 104 points. Maybe the Rangers have 104. Both of them are very close. I'm going to go with the New York Rangers.
I'm going with the Dallas Stars. And
how many points do they have right now?
103.
What are the Rangers, 104?
104. So they're right there.
Yeah.
Dallas Stars.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm going to go with the Dallas Stars mainly because I want them to get the President's Trophy
so they
bug
all
so
right.
they can get knocked out Understood. In the first round. Yeah. I don't like the Dallas Stars.
Phil, you got a President's Trophy Cup winner?
I'd probably have to go with you and go with the Rangers. Just they've got the most points,
do they?
And they've played one less game than Boston.
No, you go.
Okay.
So yeah, I'd have to go with the Rangers. I think. I think it's a toss-up, though. I mean, those three are all just right there.
Dallas has kind of come out of nowhere because they were good, but now they've just kind of gone on a rampage.
I just think Boston, though, if they have it in their sights, they're going to just take a few days off. They want no part of that thing.
Yeah. All right, here's another question. It kind of coincides with how the show's gone, but the most dangerous team heading into the playoffs in the NHL is blank.
Like, well, I think it's the Predators, unless we have a seven-game issue here for the last seven, and they can't seem to get themselves out of the mud again. But if they can, I think it's the Predators.
I would agree with that because they're a team that I think no one thought about the entire season. Yeah. And I think a lot of people, even now, aren't thinking about them.
No. Yeah.
And I think that puts them in a spot to be dangerous. Mm-hmm. And if they can get the penalty kill back going, you know, because early in the season, their penalty kill and power play were pretty good.
Yeah, they're 26th now in penalty kill, and that's not going to work in the playoffs. Yeah. That's the problem. Who do you have?
I got the Lightning. I think the Lightning are a dangerous
team. They're always
team.
Dangerous.
I think they're dangerous for a different reason than the Predators. The Predators have that fearless, relentlessness about them, whereas when I look at the Lightning, they've been here before.
Yeah.
They've got
They know what to do.
They know what to do. They've been in this before.
All right.
Last question, non-sports.
Oh, boy. I love Elijah's non-sports questions.
You know what it's probably going to have to do with, but your favorite guilty pleasure movie, Kenny?
It's like, always the movies.
But yeah.
So guilty pleasure movie? What does that mean?
Let me give you an example here. A guilty pleasure is something that you know this is not a great film. But
so
yet,
are you
for
saying
some reason,
my favorite bad movie that
well,
I like?
It's
or
a guilty pleasure. It's like a pleasure that you know is not great, but you just enjoy watching
Like
it.
Speaking to you?
You know, that's a good one. Like a whole movie about me talking
is
my guilty pleasure.
I'd leave the theater. I demand my money back. Listen, if I have to define it as a movie I know everyone else thinks is really terrible,
and I find
a way to enjoy it, I probably have said this, and I know it's almost disturbing, but Eyes Wide Shut, I can't turn that off when it's on. I don't know why. It is horrible. It is absolutely horrible. It makes no sense. I still haven't figured it out. But yet, when it's on, I will sit there and watch the darn thing.
Wow.
Yeah. Phil, you have a movie?
I would probably have to go with like some 80s movie, like Weekend at Bernie's.
Ah, there you go. He's dead. He's actually dead. It's just sunglasses, everybody.
Well, I'm going back to the 80s, too. Okay. Mine is Red Sonja.
Red Sonja. That was with
Bridget Nielsen
Bridget
and Arnold
Nielsen,
Schwarzenegger.
That's
Listen,
right.
That
that's
movie,
right.
The acting is so over the top.
Yeah.
It is so bad. Yet, this is one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
It is so aware of what it is. It's a great watch. In fact, one of Caitlin and our first dates, Was got watching Red Sonja.
Got her name in there right at the end.
Yeah, I had to. I had to get her in there.
Watching once. Red Sonja. She's
looking at me like, you love this movie.
I'm she's
like,
still alive, Bridget Nielsen.
Yes,
I'm actually confused because I know she had a big drug thing and whatnot. And I'll tell you what. I mean, look, I'm not going to judge, but wow, did she fall off the cliff? My God, she was like one of the, it looked like one of those beautiful women in the world. And Sylvester Stallone and everything. And now, oh my gosh, the drugs.
Yeah, she looks rough.
Took a toll on her.
She didn't live well either.
I know. Yeah. I don't know.
I'll give you another guilty movie. Army of Darkness.
That's a good one. That's a good one. That's one of those movies.
I've always loved it. And when my wife and I were dating, the first time we saw it, she watched it, she looked at me like, what is this garbage?
Now, if you use, you know, like my wife, for example, to use her, Glenn Ross, I watched that movie. I've probably seen it 100 times. And she still doesn't understand how I could sit there and watch this movie. All it is real estate guys cursing nonstop. But it's like Jack Lemmon and Al Pacino and Ed Harris and every one of them, Kevin Spacey. Everyone is unbelievable. But it is kind of like that kind of movie. You really have to want to sit and watch. It has like no redeeming value.
The other one for me would probably be the fourth installment of The Scorpion King, which for some reason...
How was it three before that?
Well, The Rock was in the first one, okay? It was the first movie that put him on the map, but that...
So out of all the movies, Elijah picks one with The Rock and one he was not in Schwarzenegger.
This movie was so bad it didn't have The Rock in it, but it's another one of those Red Sonja types where it's very over... I love those films where the acting is so over the top that you just kind of almost sit there and laugh.
I will say some of those are good, and there are some now that parody themselves on like the Sci-Fi Network where they'll have like Sharknado 7. Yeah.
That's a good one.
It's actually funny to watch because they know what they're doing. They know it's terrible, and they're having a lot of fun with it, so that's kind of cool. But
that's a good one. I didn't think of Sharknado.
Last week it was on. It was like sharks were coming out of the sky. How in the world this was happening, but they were landing on the freeway.
Was that my super ex-girlfriend?
No. This was one of these sci-fi, you know, movies. But anyway, there you go.
Thank you for your
high-pitched fill in the blanks.
You're welcome.
Why? You know who he is? He's that guy, Phil, that when, you know, he's got the deep voice and he'll say to you, one day we were hanging out with my friends. You ever notice that when you're hanging out with your friends, like things can be really cool? And then, you know, we were just there and you ever noticed? And you're like, what the heck was that? Like, where is that coming from? It's like he has an inner little baby voice in him that lets out when he reminisces a little. So, all right. Oh, what a great show, Phil.
Yes. We'll have stuff to reminisce about today. We had Pete Weber on there and a good chance to talk a little bit about the college basketball tournament over the weekend and some great games that are coming up in the men's and women's tournaments. Like we said earlier, I probably actually will watch the Women's Finals Four this year.
Absolutely.
I would love it if Caitlin Clark could win, if Iowa could pull it off.
That'd be
great.
I
would love that.
It'd be a lot of fun.
It'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we'll have a lot more coming up next week. Mike Keith, voice of the Titans, should be joining us as well, and we're looking forward to that. Always a fun visit with him. This has been Triple Play Sports.